Brown, Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith. Thank you so much. 50 minutes every afternoon, almost an hour, which is probably not nearly enough this afternoon with so much going on. Sanctuary cities now, mayors of these cities, governors of the states even stepping in and saying, we'll do what it takes to protect our people. Interesting stance when it comes to what we're hearing from the federal government now with President Trump in charge, essentially saying no more, no more sanctuary cities. We're not going to allow that. We're going to come after, quote unquote, the criminals in these cities, which simply being here illegally, even overstaying your visa, right? You can be considered a criminal. You're breaking the law. So we'll talk about that. Also this afternoon, taking a look at the March for Life, at least from the perspective of media coverage and some interesting things that the president has said, and LifeSite News at least picking up on this, and it's been shared a couple of times on my Facebook page, so I intend to talk about it. And my response to the recent assertion of torture being good for the life of Americans, right? We're going to save our people, protect our people by being torturous. We'll talk about that and what human dignity really looks like. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back in a moment.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. Posted last night on Facebook my maybe late in the game New Year's resolution. Haven't really talked a whole lot about that, but I think I discovered it. I think it just kind of appeared to me last night, kind of out of the blue, because I'm working on a new music project, a couple of them actually. I've been a hobbyist to semi-professional musician for almost 40 years, and I'm writing new music and working on a collaboration project with an old friend, and doing the same when it comes to a cover set of just popular music. And Madman Across the Water is one that came into the repertoire. And so I began looking at some old Elton John videos and discovered that, wow, not that I didn't know he was amazingly talented, not that I didn't already have just an immense appreciation for him, but going back to the early 70s, watching these videos of his performances, just unbelievable. I mean, so, so gifted and just beautiful. I mean, beautiful music, beautiful execution, songwriting, right? That he would write the melody and the music to these lyrics of Bernie Taupin, and wow. I mean, just moving. Amazing. So, as I said, I think my New Year's resolution is to put as much Elton John into my life as possible, because, wow, just what a way to learn, right? What a way to learn to be better at what you do. Yes, as a guy that's almost 50, still trying to get to improve in whatever ways I can, and move it along a little bit further at a time. So I want to talk about this sanctuary city situation. We've seen that essentially the Trump administration has come out and said, we're not going to take it anymore. Law and order. I think we've heard that a number of times. It is time for these cities to give up and not allow criminals to be harbored. And some really interesting things that are coming out of this from the state of California, especially also from Boston, Massachusetts, with the mayor there and even Governor Brown of California and a number of these political leaders on the local level saying, look, we're going to honor the Constitution. Promise you that. We're not going to do anything that would disavow us as states and cities and the way we operate within the constructs of the Constitution, but we're not going to allow this type of kind of steamrolling, apparently, that they see as happening. What's interesting, if you look at the state of California, which I would guess is probably true of any densely populated state, but California in particular, and the one report that I was that I got information from was that the state receives less in federal funding than it gives. And this is the threat, right? Well, if you don't do this, you can forget about any kind of federal funding. And basically what California has essentially countered back is, okay, right? Okay, we'll deal with it, because they realize they're a donor, what they call a donor state. They give much more to the feds than they ever see back, and any of that coming back for any kind of anything. So, you know, we've talked about this for a long time. What if California succeeds? It's just been in the joke, like, that, you know, they're such a different world. They're left coast, they're you name it, whatever. They're so out there that they may as well be another country. Well, you know, are we about to see that degree of resistance? And I think that this was one of the interesting things. If you look at the popular vote versus the electoral vote, that popular vote was basically not 100%, but 90% concentrated on the coastlines, right? We're looking at New York down to Miami. Look at all up and down the coast of the Pacific. You see this popular vote response completely opposite than that of the electoral vote. So could there be something to this, that this is the beginning of something that could potentially be the inner and outer United States, right? You got the coastlines, and then you've got the heartland. And it's interesting. There have been other opinions when it comes to the way the country is divided, that we really are demographically more colloquial than we are homogenous, and that there's really something about the regions of the U.S. even could be divided much greater than just the coasts and the heartland. It could really be divided down into maybe seven or so distinctive regions that would have a degree of nomenclature to its self that is unique, really rather unique. So who knows? But the one thing we do know is there are those mayors, those governors, who are already saying, no, this is not going to fly with us. We are a state. We have a degree of sovereignty as a state that we can exercise within the Constitution, and we will do that if we have to do it. So, going to be interesting to watch this. Other thing that's interesting to watch is what could be happening within the disenfranchisement. I mentioned this even in the election. If you think about where Donald Trump is compared to the base of many of Congress and the Senate, there's a significant discrepancy there. And if you consider that here is at least one issue that Lindsey Graham has spoken out on that has begun an erosion there, because he's saying, look, you won the election. Why do we need this really, as he says, kind of a wild assertion of voter fraud, that if you think about 3.5 to 5 million votes that were fraudulent, and you look at the loss in prior elections and the popular versus the electorate here, you don't want to go messing with that, first off. And he says the other thing is that even if you did dig in and you found this to be proven, or rather you find it to be, you know, factual, that the election was what it was, right? There was no harm done. Everything shakes out. Everything looks good. And after the investigation, the damage done because you have now inserted this degree of doubt. You've simply planted a huge seed that says, well, here's something else we can't trust. You know, there are things that I don't like about the government. There are things that I just would prefer that we don't have to deal with. But I don't have a vast conspiracy theory of assuming that everything is bad. I think that there are those who want a true checks and balances. They understand the way our democracy works. They understand the division of powers, and they're willing to participate in that as representatives, as Congress people, as senators. And they really want the good of the country. Do I believe that there are those who are there kind of pocketing and cashing in at times? Yes, undoubtedly. But I think if you have someone who is willing to step up for principle and say, look, we're going down a road that does not need to be traveled for a couple of reasons. One, you won the election. Just accept that. Two, we're going to potentially erode the confidence of the American people. And three, it's a big bunch of resources we have to dump into this, time and money, that could be much more productively used. So it's interesting to see a Republican senator coming out with this type of criticism, and it kind of makes you wonder who's next, right? We've seen this even in the church when you see cardinals dissenting, if you will. There are those who would challenge me just on that language and say, Leo, these aren't dissenters. They just want clarification. Okay, I get it. But they've band together to say, we're going to get to the bottom of these questions that we're trying to get answered based on what we see that we don't like in Amoris Laetitia. And therefore, we're going to have a little bit of a challenge to our leadership. The same thing could happen, certainly for this administration, and it's not the same as a church, right? We as people have no say in who gets to be a cardinal or who gets to be a bishop or who gets to be a priest. It's not a democracy where we get to elect those positions. So even if there's a little bit of question and like, okay, what is this? It's not going to have the same type of result that could be when you start disenfranchising your base of leadership. Because now if you don't get things done, because you've got the opportunity, now you could actually see some traction and see some things moving in the direction that you want. But if you divide your own support to the point that you can't get it done, well, you've only got a couple of years. And I think that's we think a president has four. No, president really has two. But and I would say even less than that. You really get kind of a year, right? Get it all going, get it moving in the right direction, because then the campaigns are going to begin for midterms, and you're going to have Senate seats and Congress seats that are going to be potentially replaced if you aren't moving it in the right direction. So I think it's a very dangerous precedent to see someone from your own base, a senator especially, not that you could say, well, it's just a congressman, but I think we all agree that Senate is smaller, therefore holds a tremendous amount more clout for the individual votes. It's not a good trajectory, just not a good trajectory. You need to mend that one up as quickly as you can. More to come in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
If you like what you're hearing, become a friend of the show. Visit RedboxMedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at BreadboxMedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Trump insisting that Mexico will pay for the wall that is being proposed, the president of Mexico canceling the meeting with Donald Trump, basically saying, what is there to discuss? Right? Why do we need to meet to talk about something I don't intend to do ever? You got to be kidding me. So where all of this goes remains to be seen. I do know that at least there's congressional support for what he's saying. So who knows? We'll see where it leads. But the one thing I would say in all of this is what I tried to intimate in a Facebook post earlier today, and that is the concept of human dignity, which is truly the hinge point. I've said this many times, that in the election, I'll continue to say it. There's never a time it's out of season, because it is what it is. It is the absolute crux of all that we do. And that is human dignity. We have to ask ourselves, is this dignified to me and to others? Now, if you can, in all honesty, say, I can maintain my dignity and I don't have any, there's no imposition, right? I'm not imposing or certainly diminishing dignity of others by what I'm doing. Well, then that's a first step toward a sound decision. If that's the case, then the decision could be sound. If for some reason, by doing what you're doing, there's a potential of degrading human dignity, now we got a problem. Now we got a problem. So I know we have, and this is, there's nothing that our church understands, teaches, upholds that says nations can't set their borders. Nations can't protect themselves. Absolutely. But let's ask ourselves, what is a dignified solution? Is a dignified solution, I mean, here's the thing, you want to create jobs, instead of building a wall, then build refuge centers, true centers of resource, and put these on the border. And then say, anybody who needs whatever they need, they're going to come there. They may eventually have to go back. We're not saying it's a pass-through to come into where we are, but we're going to at least find some way, somehow, of getting you what you need. And then we work with the local government. I know that sounds like, it's like, Leo, that's crazy. It can't be done. Well, but a border wall could, that has to be manned by armed militia. Is that a better solution? You want to create jobs? Let's create jobs. All right, let's put, I don't know, how many is it going to take? One within every mile, right? How many thousands of miles do we have across the southern border? I don't know. I don't know if it's quite that much when you consider really what it is. It's not the entire U.S., really, unless you say we're going to man the shores of the Gulf and the Atlantic and the Pacific, whatever. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the specific border from Texas to California, right? That's what I'm talking about. Is that what we need to do? Do we need to provide real centers of resource? Because you could create jobs. You could have a lot of construction for a number of years, and it's all got to be manned. And you would actually have, I think, more demand for, and it would be government jobs, but you have more demand for that worker in those centers than you would somebody with a gun. Because it's probably going to take more one-to-one counseling and one-to-one, let's figure this out. Let's get you back to your local government, finding the resources that are available. And guess what? If that local government doesn't have those resources, let's find ways to help them do that. And one of the best ways to do that is, how do we stimulate your economy? Because see, that's how we win this. We don't win by saying, I win, you lose. Because I promise, if all you do is say, I win, you lose, the losers now want to compete. They don't only want to compete, now they want to retaliate. But when you say, I am going to put you equal to me, right? Because the rhetoric now is America first, America first, America first. Buy American, hire American, hire American. This is what it's all about. It's all about America. But if we say, how do we help Mexico be as fruitful as we are? And how do we really win in this? Which this was one of the reasons for the North Atlantic Free Trade Agreement. This is one of the things that our president currently hates. But it was an opportunity to at least try to level some playing fields. And Mexico, my goodness, we don't realize the booming economy that is there. I mean, yeah, their peso is weak compared to the dollar. And I mean, and that's one of the reasons why it's advantageous for businesses to do business there. The other is the fact that they have so many free trade agreements, way, way, way more than any other country on the planet, to the tune of, 40 automakers who are making cars there? So there's economy. There's tax base. There's opportunity. What we need to do is find a way to connect people back into that. Because my guess is that those trying to make this trek and get into the U.S. illegally are doing so because they see some sort of shining city on the hill that they don't see in their country, and they're willing to risk it to make that pass. Well, let's find a way to connect them to resourcing. Let's find a way, if it's ours to begin with, to get them transitioned back to theirs, but you don't just dump them across the fence, escort them through the wall, and let them go. That's not going to work. Because until needs are truly met, it's the argument that I make when it comes to abortion, right? Until needs are met, there is going to be a demand. All the legislation in the world, all of the marching, put 10 million people in Washington, D.C., all holding signs that abortion is murder. What does that do for the girl who discovers tomorrow that she's pregnant and she is terrified? What does that do? That help her? Repeal Roe v. Wade. Make abortion illegal in all 50 states. Close every abortuary and every Planned Parenthood facility on the planet. What happens tomorrow? What happens tomorrow when that high school or college girl discovers she's late, gets a little bit freaked out, and then goes to the drugstore, gets the pregnancy test, comes home and confirms it? Now what? Does she say, oh, you know what? Yeah, wow. Well, it's a good thing abortion's illegal because, well, now that's not an option for me. Whew, good. Thanks. Thanks to the powerful legislation. The odds are that she could have come from that household even. She could have come from that household that was so ardently pro-life and so even to the point of, we don't want to ever hear you come to us and tell us you're pregnant. Now what does she do? Does she say, wow, I'm so blessed to have this opportunity now with no resources, no network, no connection? Or does she try to find every possible way to take care of this situation without her parents knowing? And of course, without any quote unquote authorities knowing, because now it's all illegal. Now, what we got to do is reduce the demand. And we have got to show women in these situations that, first off, there's always hope. We're going to help women even communicate this to their families. That very difficult conversation does not have to be handled alone. And even though you thought your life was over, I want you to talk to so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so, and so-and-so, and watch this 10-minute video, because you're going to hear 10 testimonies of women who were right where you were. But you know what? It didn't end that way for them. Because they had a completely different understanding once they saw what the big picture was. So let's help you. See, the demand for abortion could be eradicated. It's not politically expedient. It's not as extreme as this banishment movement and this rally and crusade. It's hard to crusade for, let's help women find real solutions and truly heal through this challenge that they're dealing with. Hard to crusade on that, right? I mean, it's not stop abortion now, right? Hey, hey, ho, ho. Roe v. Wade has got to go, right? All of that stuff that is a part of this rally. The solution is actually much simpler, much less sexy, right? It's not a sexy solution. It doesn't get your heart pumping and your blood boiling. It's simply a way of looking at things differently to say, let's reduce the demand by showing that there's real solutions and real resourcing, showing success stories and testimonials and offering opportunities for women to parent first, and if they can't parent, to show that they're loving arms of adoptive parents waiting. Could change. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Cool video from one of these protests recently. I'm guessing, and don't hold me to this, that it was in reaction to maybe some of the post-election, post-inauguration outbreaks of looting and things that happened when it came to property damage. That's what I'm guessing. Don't hold me to it, because I didn't get that much information out of the video. But what you see is a gentleman that we've seen around on the internet, or at least I'm guessing it's him. It could be somebody else in the similar t-shirt saying free hugs. I don't know if you've seen this, certainly during the Black Lives Matter stuff and, you know, Ferguson, whatever, he's there. And he shows up in this video because there's a group of people trying to get through a police barricade. And he steps out to say, hey, you know, all they're asking you to do is just move in a different direction. You can't come through here. There was stuff damaged and there's an investigation going on and it just can't be a part of it. That's all they're asking. And he begins to address one of the more aggressive members in the group. And the way he diffuses the situation is pretty amazing, because first off, they're saying, well, we saw you here. So yeah, because he's that guy saying free hugs. And he's like, I don't work with the police. My organization is not, we're here just to help defuse situations. That's what we do. That's all we do. We're here just to help everything work. So you go home. So everything is safe. So nothing crazy happens. We want everybody to be cool. That's all we're here for. And then as the gentleman begins to speak, and with everything that the guy says, initially aggressively and emotionally, the guy embraces, absorbs that energy, and his first response almost invariably to everything the gentleman says is, I know, I get it, I, yes, absolutely. As opposed to what we generally do in these situations, where we just want to ratchet up even more, right? I mean, how often do we get cranked in some way emotionally to the point that now all we're doing is making the matters worse? But he simply says, I know. I get it. But look, I'm on your side. Now he's louder and because it's on the street and people are yelling, and he's embracing, absorbing, I almost said deflecting. It's really not deflection. It's absorption. That's what's happening here. Now I bring this up because I think it's a skill set that's important to have anywhere, anytime, but I think that we're only beginning to see the beginning of vitriol, continued vitriol, because of what is now beginning to unfold very quickly, and especially this immigration issue. I think that this is one that's got a lot of people taking sides. I mean, you've got mayors of major U.S. metropolitans taking sides. You got people with a ratcheted sense of fear. And what we're going to have to do, I believe, all of us, is get even better at diffusing situations that could potentially get a little bit escalated. We've got to find a way to help others take deep breaths, right? We got to be able to, and this, what is interesting, what I find amazing is this guy just gets into it, right? It's not like keeping a distance. He's there. A close enough striking distance. Close enough that if this guy was inclined, he would throw a punch, but he's not letting him, not from a physical standpoint. He's not, nobody's grabbing anybody and trying to push, you know, you see that kind of stuff that happens and break it up kind of stuff. It's not what it is. He's just calmly, assertively, but very controlled, in a very controlled fashion, just absorbing this challenge and diffusing it. I think we, you know, call me crazy, but I think it's a great skill set. It's a great skill set in any environment to know how to stay in control and not let your emotions get the best of you. I can say that. I can say that, but it's not easy. It's a great skill set. Like I say, it's a great skill set to have. Not easy, but to see this type of, I know, I understand, I agree, that is such an important lead out in these type of dynamics. We got to really understand that. So posted this earlier on my Facebook page, this New York Times article with the actual signature of the executive order that's basically saying the wall is under construction. And with that, refugee is limited even more so in the U.S. than it was prior. And President Trump is saying we're going to save thousands and thousands of lives. Now, I asked the question because I really don't know what he means by that. Whose lives are at stake with this situation? Because to me, I know refugees' lives are at stake. I know that immigrant lives are at stake, especially if they stake it all trying to get into the U.S. I know that that happens. I know that Syrian refugees have died by the thousands, yes. So where does that dynamic come into play of saving these lives? I ask that with all sincerity, because it sounds like an interesting piece of propaganda that is disturbing. Scripture is very clear. I posted this as well. A number of both Old and New Testament passages talking about welcoming the stranger, how we treat our enemies, how we treat those who are not of our nationality, the aliens, as they're called generally in Scripture, and what we need to do as people of faith to do this differently, to change the dynamic. Because that's always our mission. Regardless of what's going on, we have to get in and show this is how we do things. And what we do is love others. We love God by loving others, right? I mean, think about it. Jesus said it. Here's everything. The law and the prophets, all, what was it? 3,000, 2,000 years of tradition up to Jesus. I'm not sure if I've ever really gotten a clear understanding of the timeline from. And we're measuring from Abraham, we're measuring from Adam, right? Where does that really start? But nonetheless, a lot of history, an entire nation of faith built on one prophet after another, after another, after another, throughout salvation history, leading to the last Old Testament prophet of John the Baptist, into the new covenant of Christ. And what does he say? Two things. Love God and love others. And again, He shows us how to love God by loving others in Matthew 25. Because essentially what he is saying is that he's there. He's the guy. He's the one who's in need. When you serve the least, you serve him. And if you notice in that Matthew 25 exhortation, he doesn't say, how many times were you at church? Now, I'm not saying faithful reception of the sacraments is not something that we need to be concerned about. I'm not saying that. That should be fuel for the fire, right? We don't measure the success of the race car driver by his pit stops. We may by the speed of his pits, right? Because he's got to get it done, get in there. But it's not so much about how many times you fueled, it's how fast did you make it around the track and how effective were you when you were on that track. That's what we've got to understand. How effective are we when we're on the track? And are we on the track? Are we on track? Right? That's a big one to ask as well. Because ultimately, that is what it is. That is everything. The law and the prophets. It's love God and love others. Then Matthew 25, very clearly, showing you how to love others in order to love God. And part of that is welcoming those in need, whatever the need is, meeting them, addressing their needs, sick, hungry, poor, alone. It's part of what we're called to do. So by creating an isolationistic environment that says, you're not welcome here, or I've got to be suspicious of you, or you're dangerous. I mean, that's what this video talks about. Those who pose a public threat. Well, who is that? Who's doing that? Where are the thousands of lives? What are we talking about? What kind of interesting rhetoric is this? Because I would think, and this is not a popular opinion, but if you look at the massive crimes perpetrated in the U.S. when it comes to mass shootings, that would be a couple or three or five or 50. By and large, these are all perpetrated by U.S. citizens. And many of them natural born. We don't necessarily see this dynamic of an immigrant coming in and doing something egregious of that nature. So we're seeing a lot of fear base develop. We're going to have more opposition from camps we need to be able to defuse. I think it's going to be very important for us to know how to defuse. All that on my Facebook page, Leo C. Brown. Follow me there. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.